need to do something substantial in order to get the attention of the clubs.
Why?
Because they're exclusive and fun, and they lead to a better life.
People want to go on the internet and check out their friends, so why not build a website that offers that? Friends, pictures, profiles. I'm talking about taking the entire social experience of college and putting it online.
Site got 2,200 hits within 2 hours.
1,000. 22,000.
This idea is potentially worth millions of dollars.
Millions?
You stole our website.
They're saying we stole the Facebook.
I know what it says.
So did we?
$1 million isn't cool. You know what's cool? $1 billion.
You're going to get left behind. It's moving faster than any of us ever imagined.
Get left behind.
Let's sue him in federal court.
I can't wait to stand over your shoulder and what you write as a check.
You guys were the inventors of Facebook.
You invented Facebook.
Is there anything that you need to tell me?
Your actions could have permanently destroyed everything I've been working on.
We have been working on.
Did you like being a joke? Do you want to go back to that?
Mark!
This is our time.
Accused of intentionally breaching security, violating copyrights, violating individual privacy.
Your best friend is suing you for $600 million.
As for the charges, I believe I deserve some recognition from this board.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
I don't understand.
Which part?
Hello, welcome to the Extra Credits Plus of David Fincher's The Social Network. I'm Trey.
And I'm Kelsey.
I am so thrilled.
I'm so excited
to talk about this movie today. I think it is the most important movie of the 21st century. Not an opinion, fact. And it is, I'm just kidding. It is one of the most important movies, though, I think. I think it is. It's definitely one of my favorite films of all time.
Yeah, no, I mean, I am so excited for this movie. I know Trey is probably levels above me in excitement. This is one of Trey's favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, I'm vibing right now.
And I am vibrating right now. I'm really excited though too. I love the performances in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also just like really seamless, you know. The pacing is like on point. It feels like just long enough.
It's only 2 hours.
Yeah.
Whereas Zodiac was almost three.
Yeah. But there's like an arc too, right? Where Zodiac, you know, is like amazing in its own right. But there's
incredible,
a little bit of like meandering, like because it's an investigation and you're supposed to feel that these people are lost. But this is like so tight. You know, we have the Sorkin script and dialogue, like just as an engine.
Kind of
like
electric.
Yeah. And we're seeing these people like, you know, go through really dark moments, but it's almost like a comedy, right?
It's like coming of age John Hughes comedy in moments that's really moody.
Yeah, but also it's a drama. There's a tension story between two people who are like in love and friendship.
Yeah.
And
it is kind of a breakup film.
Yeah.
Breakup of a business, breakup of a relationship.
Inside like a law movie. So yeah, so there's a lot going on. I'm so excited to talk about it today.
Yeah.
But beyond it just being a great story and a really like seamless movie, it just ages so well, right? Like it's about Facebook. It's about a major social network that obviously still exists today and has like ebbed and flowed in terms of being like cool, right? Or not
cool,
but it's
too
still,
controversial, too destructive.
Yeah. Still about like kind of how we are so much online. Like one of the kind of underrated quotes of this movie. There's a lot of really great quotes that we'll talk about today, obviously, like the flip-flops and everything. But Sean Parker, played by Justin Timberlake, at one point says that, you know, we lived on farms, then we lived in cities, and now we're going to live on the internet.
Yeah.
And he's like so excited. And it's like, it is this really like interesting, it captures a moment that we lived through. Like we didn't have
the
internet growing up. We were like a part of that generation that really
the dial-up generation,
like the internet was a thing, you know, it took like forever to load, then the social networking sites like blew up. Like we were really like growing up during that time, so it's like fascinating for us to think about this movie as a time capsule of it like being exciting to now it being like me death scrolling like at 11 o'clock at night.
Well when I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to have MySpace or anything, and my parents talked about Facebook as if it was a dangerous website, so like I wasn't allowed to have one. I just like sneak my way into a Facebook account. And now it's an app that I don't even touch today, so it is interesting to look back at this movie as a time capsule, as a zeitgeisty movie, as a Shakespearean, like weirdly coming of age movie that is incredibly dark, that feels like it's a Taxi Driver film too. It is just, it's an incredible movie. And I think when people talk about some of the best films of the 21st century, two of the best movies they talk about are Zodiac and The Social Network. And they're both made by David Fincher, obviously. This one's written by Aaron Sorkin, as you said. And it is a film that, you know, explores like what you're talking about, the development of Facebook, a moment where Facebook was interesting. And now looking at it with this revisionist lens as a place where like it's hell on earth or hell on the internet.
Yeah.
And it's become like this piece of like yellow journalism and has become like a manipulative website that like sells data.
Yeah.
Or like gives personalized data to ads that will then like kind of ruin your life and make your identity based on like brands. And it's become just like a fascinating movie to rewatch. I've loved it on so many different levels. I've loved so many different interpretations of it. I love hearing people talk about The Social Network,
yeah,
because
same.
I just find myself fascinated by the way that people perceive different elements of this movie and the different character studies. And I think this is probably like my 30th, I'm not even being hyperbolic, like my 30th-ish rewatch of this movie.
Yeah.
That we're about to start in a second. And I was looking closely last night when watching this, we were watching the commentary of the cast and crew of like Sorkin and all the actors kind of commenting throughout the film. And I was realizing, listening to Sorkin talk about the screenplay, that the structure of this film is really nothing I've ever really sat down and thought about deeply, because the framing device of this movie, it's like something that's kind of underrated about the film, is that it's through depositions. Mm-hmm. And the film revolves around like legal battles.
Yeah, and it's like in flashbacks.
Yeah, and like these mahogany rooms without like any emotion or any kind of like color. And you're left with these lawyers played by great character actors like John Getz, who are like really killing every scene. But the way that it's edited and the way that they insert the score from Reznor and Ross, it just really does a great job of going back and forth and time jumping with different conflicts. And we have those present day conflicts too that are used for those time jumps. We kind of have three stories that are being like thrown at us at once. We have the Garfield, we have the Winklevi, we have the going in the past back to Harvard, where you have a bunch of Ivy League 19 to 22 year olds fighting over money, but then you realize that they're actually like kind of battling each other over influence. And it's sort of like this war film of sorts, like a war film with your words between yeah. like these old aristocrats of like the East Coast versus these like new ones. That reminds me of like a Barry Lyndon film or something. It's really interesting.
You know, it's so funny. I've never thought of it as like a war film, but I think like the kind of strategizing in rooms that you're talking about,
yeah.
which people like really enjoy about those movies, or at least just find interesting, right? Like there are so many scenes where Justin Timberlake and Jesse Eisenberg are like kind of plotting, but mm-hmm. you have to, you know, it's not explicit, you know? And so in the earlier script, there were more kind of direct dialogue pieces of Justin Timberlake saying over and over again, like, where's Eduardo? Where's Eduardo?
Right,
which
yeah.
is, you know, Andrew Garfield's character. But Fincher, like throughout that process, actually like decided to take a lot of the kind of really explicit thesis statements out of the movie. So you're just getting that from their conversations, from the kind of like seduction conversations with mm-hmm. Sean
Parker
and Justin Timberlake, you know, and Jesse Eisenberg's character. And so you're right. Like it is kind of, we're being told in flashbacks, that is similar to how a maybe war movie is framed.
Yeah.
So that's like really fascinating, but you're right. It's all inside this like legal deposition story. That is something that Aaron Sorkin does normally, right? Like mm-hmm. we're used to seeing that a few good men,
yeah.
right? He like has that kind of like fast talking, you want to keep paying attention, you're hooked mm-hmm. kind of dialogue that he writes. But there's something that is dark about it with both the score, like you were saying, and also David Fincher's lens on it. So I think like they are, you know, David Fincher and Aaron Sorkin are like a beautiful match here, because he kind of takes out some of the more like light and like, look at this fascinating guy, you know,
the glorification.
This is a Tom Cruise
yeah.
character in A Few Good Men, right? He takes out the heroic elements of this like fast dialogue and turns it into something a little bit more sinister.
Right. And we will talk about today that Fincher still seems to like this Mark character.
Yeah.
We will try to differentiate today. Like when we talk about Mark Zuckerberg on this podcast, we are talking about Mark Zuckerberg, the character in this film.
Yes.
And we'll talk about maybe some differences between real life and the film, but I really want to stick to the film mainly. If people don't know, the film is loosely based on a book by Ben Mezrich called The Accidental Billionaires. But like I said, Sorkin's screenplay is structurally very different than anything really we've seen. This is a kind of a singular movie in how it's structured, and they choose to frame the narrative around those two major lawsuits, one filed by the Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss twins, and then they're the ones who allege, I guess, Zuckerberg stole their concept, Connect You, I believe is what they called it, and then that's what Mark calls the Facebook. And then the other lawsuit being led by Eduardo Saverin, who Kelsey was talking about, played by Andrew Garfield, who was pushed out of the company and out of Mark's life, which is, I guess, the central tension, the kind of melodrama of the film is between Jesse Eisenberg's character and Andrew Garfield's. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a melodrama that I like to come back to. I think it's really spicy, and I think it's excitingly dramatic. And again, I think this is the most evergreen, important movie of the 21st century. And I don't like using that important word a lot when talking about movies because it can be so pretentious and maybe overthinking it. But the way this film explores the cost of ambition in the digital age specifically, and how it has this undercurrent of classical, moody, Shakespearean betrayal in the backdrop of like a modern tale, I think it's just going to be remembered for how provocative as a dramatization of these real life events.
Yeah.
And it's really also memorable for those Shakespearean complexities of like interpersonal relationships and this creation of a new social class by Zuckerberg and like his, basically the way they're portrayed, like his nerdy friends stuck in dorm rooms who can't get into the party.
Mm-hmm.
And I also love how this movie questions like who is morally implicated when there are blurred lines between breakups of friends. There's a lot of stuff about just the human condition in this film that is interesting because it's also connecting like how people justify breaking up with friends to how people justify breaking up in business. Mm-hmm. And this kind of this, the way that capitalism and the human condition have kind of been connected moving into the 21st century with the way that we all become brands after Facebook is created.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's just really smart. And I think it's always going to age well, even if like we have to revisit this movie with a 2023 lens. I just think it's a fantastic character driven drama. And it's, I think, the most incredibly compelling glimpse into the dilemma of this recreation of social classes through a social network, all because of this fragile 19-year-old. And I guess we'll talk about this throughout this movie and watching it again in this deep dive, that whether or not this is Taxi Driver or whether or not it's Ferris Bueller.
Hmm.
And that kind of conflict that even Fincher on the commentary and all of his interviews seems like he was running through. He couldn't tell if he was making a Citizen Kane or if he was making like a really moody John Hughes film.
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting. Like, we're watching a 19-year-old in the flashbacks to Harvard who is unwilling to like address his problems face to face. And he's like turning to the comfort of his computer and his keyboard, which then leads to one of the most significant technological developments of the 21st century in Facebook. And while like Fincher probably, I think we can say certainly sympathizes with like the young man idea, the young genius idea of being tortured by his own greatness, because that's something Fincher went
right,
through.
He was a filmmaker at a very young age. Yeah.
Yeah, in his young 20s in boardrooms with millionaires, two sometimes billionaires, talking about the industry and like Alien 3 and having that film co-opted by people who weren't artists. And I think regardless of that, you know, this director's intention or the kind of pro Mark, if you will, readings of this film, I do think this movie works really well in 2023 as this pre-dystopian epic that is like interrogating faux interaction through the internet and like how our identities are being exploited through social media each day. And I think Fincher successfully, whether or not, again, intentionally investigates this like new paradigm shift of power, like this evolution of old world business ethics that like men of Harvard set forth before, like the Winklevi.
Yeah, because that's what, isn't that what?
That's what Mark calls them in the movie. And I just think it's really funny because the twins. But and then like this kind of transition from the Winklevi to this new world iteration of power, which are these like Silicon Valley nerds. And we basically get to see the men who are now ruling the systems and have recreated social classes are basically like a personification of this exponential inhuman power of the internet, which is frightening. And so there's something about this movie that's also like a horror film.
Yes.
It feels like Zodiac in moments, especially at the beginning, which I know we'll get to. And so, it's incredible. I've said this before on the podcast, but I love Ridley Scott's Blade Runner. And I feel like this movie is not talked about with a dystopian lens, but it feels like a pre-dystopian epic.
Yes. Yeah. The more that you're talking about it, and I love that you framed it as kind of like a war movie in terms of like strategizing.
Yeah.
In order to, you know, like win. I'm like, is Mark Zuckerberg, you know, in this movie, the character, like Napoleon? Like, you know, like, is this like,
oh my God, really,
digital
Scott?
Age, you know, because we just saw Napoleon. It's like in my mind of this person who we look to, and like, this is, yeah. Anyway, I just think that's like fascinating. But also what's interesting that you're talking about, which we can, you know, talk about as we get into watching the movie today, is how people take different readings about Mark Zuckerberg's character here. Yeah. Like, is Fincher being sympathetic towards Mark Zuckerberg? Mm-hmm. And there are elements that when we listen to the commentary where he definitely is, because of his own background and his own kind of like having to prove himself at a young age and like feeling like people don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And then though there are also very clear like nods to him like kind of satirizing this, right?
Yeah.
And people, you know, then reading it and saying like, okay, well, he's obviously, you know, talking about how this is not a heroic character, or like this is a tragic character, even though he built this like massive thing that has taken over our lives, or like obviously not Facebook completely, but like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like it's a case of that.
Yeah. What's interesting though, is I do think like we attach cautionary tale to The Social Network quite a lot in the 2020s, but I don't think David Fincher thought of this as a cautionary tale in 2010.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
So yeah, we'll talk about the different readings then, I think.
Yeah, so I'm psyched to get into these characters, into the drama. I usually don't like drama. I feel like I don't like drama like this, where it's like friends being annoyed that they can't get into social circles, but this movie like does such a good job of making it entertaining. And then also the undercurrent that like all of our identities are at stake is just making this movie feel like it has the biggest political and social stakes, more than maybe any movie we've ever covered. Are you ready to watch?
I'm ready.
Yeah,
I'm
let's
so
do this.
Excited.
A reminder to listeners, this is a live commentary. We will be watching the movie, and it's also a deep dive episode. So you can watch The Social Network with us, or you can just listen to us discuss the movie. Remember, this is a 30-minute episode that you have a preview to on our main feed, and you'll have the full, probably like 2.5-hour episode on our Patreon in the description. And for only $5 a month, you can get our catalog to all of our Patreon episodes.
On Living Plus.
On Living Plus. All right, ready?
All right.
On play, we will start. 3, 2, 1, play. Okay.
All right, so as we're starting this out, how do you want to like get into talking about this? Should we talk about like the characters first, or like performances?
I want to talk about how I did not know how to read this movie when I first watched it in the theater in 2010, because I remember the tonal shift in this scene. I remember feeling like, okay, I'm watching a date. Okay, I'm watching a breakup.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm watching an origin serial killer movie. And I think what's so smart about this beginning scene and revisiting it in this kind of breakup scene between Rooney Mara and Jesse Eisenberg's characters, this first scene of the movie teaches you how to watch this film.
Yeah.
And it really tells you that like you have to lean in and listen to every word. And the sound design is so perfect, because you hear everyone in the bar almost louder than the actual dialogue. It probably is louder. And the sound of the radio in the bar and people screaming because they're all drunk. They're all drinking like cheap alcohol and like it's a college town night. So this is like a fascinating scene, because it really tells you what you're going to watch throughout this film. You're going to watch a lot of people talking over each other and a lot of characters talking over one another.
Yeah. I think it's interesting like to just think about how this was made too. Like, Fincher, when in this scene and also the club scene later on, like wanted the background noise that's usually a little bit lower in movies to actually be so high that you could hardly hear what the characters are saying to each other. Like, he really wanted it to be an immersive experience where we can hardly hear what the characters are saying. We have to like lean in, like you're saying. We're so glued from the beginning. We're kind of catching up. That's kind of the both Sorkin and kind of like that's usually what happens with his scripts, right? You're like, what is happening? Catching up with his quick dialogue, but also like with Fincher adding these more technical elements, and also the conversation that they're having, you're right. Like, I'm immediately hooked now that they're breaking up. I immediately think it's a date, right?
Right.
Where we have the most iconic line come in, and we are now understanding also who Jesse Eisenberg's character is, right? Like, he's talking at her so much. We learned so much of, so quickly of him wanting to be in a finals club, right? And the Phoenix specifically, because that then gives him access to like jumping. I actually don't really know his background in this, but like jumping class, right?
And, right.
And getting in rooms where he wants to be. And he's kind of deflecting that by saying like, I can get you in rooms. Like I can be important.
Right.
So he's like propping himself up. So we get this like insecurity from his character. We get this like ambition that he has. He's like really childish, right? And
yeah,
immature. But the best line here is where she's like, you know, I want you to know that you're going to go your whole life thinking that girls don't like you because you're a nerd.
Right.
But I want you to know that it's actually because you're an asshole.
Right.
And it's just an amazing line.
It is prophetic in what is to come, I think, for internet generation. It's also Fincher pinpointing a new version of masculinity where men no longer need to be 6'5 and 220 to like run patriarchy.
The Winklevosses.
They need to like figure out how to like win the world behind a computer. Mm. And so then there's like a new set of men who have been traditionally just murdered throughout history by the leaders of patriarchy. And now what you would think is you have Jesse Eisenberg's character, the marks of the world in this fictional movie, semi-fictional movie, that are, you know, the guys outside the castle who are trying to get in. You think, okay, they're going to overthrow the castle and build something more egalitarian. And that's the kind of trick of this film. It's like, no, they're actually going to make something that's seemingly maybe more egalitarian, maybe more equal, but actually they're creating something that's a little bit even more difficult for everyone else now to access that kind of wealth or power. They kind of kick the social ladder down even farther than there was before, which is interesting to me. But yeah, I think in this date, there's some, or breakup, I guess we'll just call it a breakup. There's so much like intrigue between both of them at the start of this date, which makes it interesting because by the end of their conversation in the breakup, you have this like mutual resentment by the end of the conversation. Yeah. But then you realize there isn't a mutual resentment. It's that they both dislike who Mark is. Like Mark even dislikes himself. And so I love that this whole film is structured from the first scene to the last scene where Jesse Eisenberg's character, Mark, is talking to, what's her name again from Parks and Recreation? I'm forgetting the actress's name.
Rashida Jones.
Rashida Jones, yeah. Thank you, as Marilyn Delpy, the lawyer, where the movie kind of starts off and ends with this question of whether or not Mark Zuckerberg, the character, is in fact an asshole, which I think is really smart because you have this character study of a film that is like a coming of age movie, but then you're also like asking whether or not this guy who has really used his lack of status to propel himself through this like insular Ivy League hierarchy as a microcosm for what's been happening in Silicon Valley is really just trying to now win the rest of the world because he can't force a woman to like him. And there is something about like incel culture that you can kind of feel coming out of this movie, out of this character a little bit, that I think we get to read on to the film, because I'm not sure Fincher was actually trying to do that. Though I do think the Travis Bickle elements are there.
Yes, I definitely agree. And I think that like this movie ages so well for that reason, like because even if Fincher was trying to make a movie that he was sort of sympathetic in in certain scenes, or you know how he reads Mark Zuckerberg's character specifically, like ultimately I think there are enough I guess like pieces, just like the evidence of the movie to read it in that way. Like in 2023, we understand Mark Zuckerberg to be like a case of this like
male
specific
fragility.
Yeah, exactly. Like the specific type of masculinity, or this like you know, hunger for like power and status that is like embedded in this movie.
Can we talk about Jesse Eisenberg for a second as he runs through the Johns Hopkins campus, but it's supposed to be Harvard. They couldn't shoot on Harvard. Eisenberg is incredible in this film. Like actually astonishing. It's like a Dustin Hoffman level performance. And he's probably one of the best actors of his generation, unlike like just like Andrew Garfield is, who we'll get to in a bit. But he plays such a great, meekish, like lanky, hunched. like a parody
obsessive,
of male identity, especially paralleled with the Winklevi, like I was saying, like how he is the new patriarch, like this kind of what this male character represents is like who you will see in committees, like arguing with Congress over the next 25 years is fascinating. And apparently when they were trying to cast Mark, they were looking for a 19 to 25 year old. And Fincher like was inundated with requests from fans, with studio executives to please cast Jesse Eisenberg because people loved him in Squid and the Whale or Education of Charlie Banks. And Adventureland had just came out, I believe. Yeah. And I love that movie. That's a great one with Kristen Stewart and Reynolds. But there was something about like his sweetness that Fincher really didn't want to cast Jesse Eisenberg, which is fascinating because that's not exactly the word I think of when I think of Eisenberg now, because he plays this Zuckerberg character with such kind of anger, this like sizzling anger.
Yeah.
But apparently in the audition tape, Fincher thought he was pretty undeniable and was kind of like dangerously alive in every moment. And he doesn't give you anything to work with in terms of his inner life. And when he does, you feel like connected to the character, even though you dislike him. There isn't anything really likable. There's just something about him that is like a live search engine personified. Like he is just constantly taking in information and then just kind of consuming data and coding. That's like his identity.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like, you said about his performance, but it is true. There's something that feels like he has that anger, like sitting, like bubbling, you know, as he's like talking to people. He does the kind of like, I'm giving you, you know, the smallest piece of my attention, which, you know, he says like later on, or like, I'm giving you, you should feel lucky to be like talking to me right now. Like that kind of vibe he delivers so well. Like, and I think it does have a lot to do with Fincher. You know, he's famous for doing like so many takes. And Jesse Eisenberg talked a lot about like how he liked having like so many takes because he, you know, was more like anxious. That's what he said as an actor in like big scenes. He would have like panic attacks before them, which was like, he was so open and like vulnerable on the commentary, which was like, just nice to hear someone be like, I guess, like honest about how they are approaching their craft. But I think also like he doing it so many times, Fincher was like, less emotion, less emotion, less emotion. Like, right. I want you to not basically say anything. And I think
it's like what he did with Gyllenhaal and Zodiac.
Yeah. And it worked out so well here for him to be devoid of like emotion. We just kind of see like kind of anger coming through, like you said, sort of at himself. That's how it comes off.
And there's something about his physical performance in his eyebrows, in the way his eyes, the way they, I think they must do some kind of touch up and post on the amount of shadow between the top of his eyebrow and his eyes, because it makes him look like he is deceptive. Like there is something deceiving about him, his appearance.
Sometimes, yeah, you can't see like the break between like his pupils.
Right.
And, like in his eyes, it just looks like reptilian.
Yeah. Right. And the way he's standing so straight, because I guess Mark Zuckerberg was a big fencer growing up, and people who fence a lot growing up have to keep a big kind of straight back at all times.
Yeah, you're right. He is like very upright, his posture.
Yeah. Right now we're getting to see the Phoenix Club party, which Fincher says people were kind of angry about how hyperbolic the Phoenix party was and how sexed up it was. Maybe it wasn't exactly like this, but Fincher wanted to actually capture this omniscient point of view that this is like the Phoenix Club party, while Mark is blogging about like hating women and the, you know, Rooney Mara's character and shitting on her and her family. Fincher wanted to nail this idea that this Phoenix Club party is really just this dream that's happening in the background of Mark's head.
Oh,
and that this
is
like a subjective idea.
Hi.
Hello there. Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah. Thank you for listening so far. And hopefully you are enjoying the episode so far. I feel like maybe if you made it this far.
They got it this far. They're having a good time.
I mean, let's hope. But to access our full conversation, you can go to the description of this episode to join our Patreon community, the Extra Credits Plus.
Yes. And for only $5 a month, you can get access to our full catalog of Patreon exclusive episodes. Hope to see you there.